Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Hello, I'm Kevin Kelton, a writer and social media activist from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Kuschmider, a social policy advocate and a very stable genius from Kensington, Maryland.
Hi, I'm DJ McGuire, a cost estimator and musician and a somewhat stable sub-genius from Suffolk, Virginia.
And I'm Greg Matuzak, a teacher and former political activist from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I'm somewhere in the sub-stable, sub-genius. We'll leave it there. I'm not too humble to brag. There we go.
Well, as our listeners probably know, we're all making fun of the tweet that President Trump sent out just the other day in response to the new book, Something Furious. What is it? Fast and Furious? Or?
It refers to a previous tweet. He was going to bring the fire and the fury on Kim Jong-un with his giant button that is in no way a metaphor for a penis. Nuh-uh, no way, never.
Right. So.
Somewhere, the owner of the local Staples franchise is laughing his or her ass off.
Good, yeah, because they use that big red button in their advertisements. I guess this is great publicity for them. So has anybody read the book yet? Has anybody gotten through it or even made a dent in it?
I finished it this afternoon.
Okay, so since you actually finished the whole book, I'm going to let you go first, DJ. Impressions?
Okay. The White House is a madhouse. It essentially was a battle royale between various factions, which is, you usually get that in a White House. What you normally also have in a White House is a president who has some idea of what they want to do, and therefore they will either pick one faction over the other, or they will play factions against themselves to advance the president's agenda. In this case, the impression of the president is semi-literate at best, and essentially having no real idea of what he's there for. The interesting things about the book, though, was the fact that the kids, or in particular Ivanka and Jared, who were supposed to be the smart ones among the younger Trump generations, are also probably the ones... Sorry.
No. Go on, please. Okay. That's funny, though.
They're also the ones who have gotten neck deep into all the Russia stuff. According to Wolf, Jarvanka, as they were apparently called, were the ones who pushed Trump to fire Comey over the objections of Bannon and Priebus. In fact, what comes out of the book is Jared and Ivanka have a liberal sensibility but are thoroughly corrupted by the Trump enterprise. Bannon is honest but crazy. Priebus is a loyal Republican soldier but totally out of his depth. And John Kelly, Priebus's successor as chief of staff, is there to essentially fix everything and is now coming to the realization that he can't.
Rebecca, what were your thoughts having read about half the book?
About half the book? The one thing that has stood out to me is something that I'm also finding deficient, and it's that anybody in the Trump orbit having any background in public service, in fact, the words public service have not been used yet in the book, as far as I've read. And it just sort of breaks my heart that this is our top tier of leadership right now, are people who are not public servants, who never had public service as an ambition, and in fact, don't particularly understand what a public servant's heart looks like. There's a quote where Donald Trump is talking about career government bureaucrats, but, you know, not political appointees, but the, you know, the people who are day in, day out working through multiple administrations, and saying, I don't get it. Why would you want to work for the government? You're going to make what, max 200K a year?
Yeah, I read that.
Well, we can also talk about the fact that Ivanka and Jared had decided that, you know, if the opportunity arose, Ivanka would be the one to run for president in the future.
Right.
The fact that Jared greets his father with a kiss and calls him daddy, and the fact that Trump eats in bed and won't let anybody touch his toothbrush because he's afraid of being poisoned.
And that they have separate bedrooms. I didn't know that before the book came out.
Mazel tov, Melania.
And I'm sure that's just so his 6 to 8 hours of television viewing at odd hours of the day don't wake her up.
Yeah. Speaking of his television viewing habits, there's a report in Axios today saying that his official schedule has been shortened, and he now, instead of having lots of meetings, has executive time, which I think is like district work periods for members of Congress, that, you know, it's a glorified vacation.
And what is executive time?
Well, you know, Kellyanne Conway and Sarah Sanders want us to believe that he's making phone calls and reading policy briefs and other stuff. But in fact, it appears that he's watching cable news and tweeting about being a really stable genius during that time.
No. But he doesn't. Oh, that's executive time. What is his work hours? It's 11 to 4, right? 11 a.m.
Well,
to
like
4 p.m.?
He has like from 9 to 11, he'll have executive time in the Oval where there's nothing booked on his schedule, no official calls or meetings. Then he'll have a few meetings scattered throughout the day, and then like his last official appearance will wrap up around 4:30. And that's probably when he's going back to the residence. And he's got executive time scheduled during the day, like during his lunch period and stuff like that. So he's only got a few official events. And I think that he's gotten bored with being president and is refusing to do most of it anymore, which I could have predicted a year ago.
Okay, well, hang on. Wait. We're not actually complaining that Donald Trump is spending less time ruining the country, are we?
No, we are not complaining about
okay.
that.
Okay. Just making sure.
No, I'm delighted that, although now I know that Jarvanka is doing it instead, and I can't say I'm thrilled about that, but.
Well, no, there's no reason to be happy with that.
I think we have to wonder now, right now, who's optioning the fire and the fury? Because all I can think about is what's her name playing Sarah Palin in the movie of Game Change.
Right.
And, you know, somebody is, Julianne Moore, somebody is dying to play Jarvanka. Maybe the same actor, you know, they might get like John Leguizamo to do both of them or something.
He's talented enough to do both. I mean, he's a very talented actor.
It's not like either of them are particularly deep characters that require, you know, a huge amount of preparation. You just have to be very, very pretty and have good dental work. But, you know, it's going to be an HBO movie or straight to Netflix movie. The whole thing is written like a screenplay.
Oh, my gosh. Really? If Netflix would pick that up.
We've got Alec Baldwin as Trump.
Obviously. Yeah. Oh,
the book
is just basically an extended SNL skit. Every time Trump appears in the book, I can see Alec Baldwin doing it.
If I were them, they can't do Alec Baldwin because it would come off too much of a comedy. I mean, and they kind of want it to be like, this isn't funny. This is scary.
First of all, clearly I've watched far more British media than you have, but comedy is the point. It's dark comedy. This is dark comedy. That's what this is.
All of 2017 was dark comedy.
Yeah, this is dark comedy. This is if you handed this to Armando Iannucci, he would have said, "No, this shit doesn't happen in real life." But yeah, it did. So hand it to Armando Iannucci and let him roll with it. You can do Roger Allam as Steve Bannon. You can let's see. Who'd be Rince? You know, I
Meryl
can't think
Streep
of the
Rince Prudis.
Tony Hale.
Okay.
Tony Hale was in Arrested Development, and he's on Veep.
Okay.
Oh, he'd be great.
Tilda Swinton as Kellyanne Conway.
Oh yeah.
Oh, she'd be awesome.
Let's see here. Who would be Stephen Miller?
Judi Dench.
No, that's
no,
that's Tony Hale.
You think he would be a better Tony Hale?
I think he'd be Stephen Miller, don't you think?
He could be either. You know, we should put this up on the.
No, I think we should have Vern Troyer play Stephen Miller, just because.
Let's put
Peter Dinklage would actually be really good as Steve Bannon. In total seriousness, Peter Dinklage would be a great Bannon.
Yeah, he's got that burned out look.
Well, and he's able to do evil really well, and also drunk.
You're a grumpy elf.
Hang on. I'm not sure. Does Steve Bannon drink? I've ever seen somewhere that he didn't drink.
Oh yeah, that's right. He pushed away a glass of wine dinner.
He didn't drink. And I actually admire Tyrion Lannister. So Peter Dinklage, that doesn't quite work for me as well for me as it might for you.
Yeah, but you know what? It might work for Peter Dinklage. He might want to stretch his artistic capabilities.
Well, that's altogether possible.
What about the Trump kids? Who plays Jared?
Gary Oldman might be able to pull off.
He's too old to play Jared.
Yeah, Jared would have to be younger.
Oh, I know who plays Jared. Gordon Joseph Levitt.
Oh, yeah. Gordon Joseph Levitt.
Yeah, that guy.
Levitt. That's good.
Gordon Joseph Levitt. Good call.
Would Scarlett Johansson be Ivanka?
RuPaul should be Ivanka.
No, not RuPaul.
Scarlett Johansson loves, she does on Saturday Night Live, and I actually do think she's a good actress. I really do
like
her.
But Ivanka is a bit colder than a Scarlett Johansson type character. Keira Knightley may work better. If you get her to do an American accent, she does cold and frigid a lot better than Scarlett Johansson does, in my view. Which kid would Jeremy Renner be? Would he be Don Jr. or Eric?
Eric.
Okay.
I was thinking Don Jr. because he's got that giant forehead, but Eric would be better, I guess, because he's got those teeth.
Okay, so who plays Don Jr.?
Baldwin.
Oh, Billy?
Who?
Billy. Stephen Baldwin.
A younger Baldwin. Good call. Good call.
Yeah.
I could see Ben Affleck actually playing that. I mean, he might be too old. I don't know.
He's too old.
Ben Affleck's older than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but with enough makeup.
Who plays Melania?
They
probably go with a no name, I guess.
Yeah, Melania.
It could be a Julianne Moore or
Not Julianne Moore. Natalie Dormer.
Gwyneth.
I was thinking of Natalie Portman. Dormer.
No, Natalie Dormer.
Oh, I don't
Dormer
remember.
From Game of Thrones.
Yes,
I think Gwyneth Paltrow could do it.
Gwyneth Paltrow can barely open a jar of olives.
Have you heard the latest thing Gwyneth Paltrow's site is promoting?
No.
Coffee enemas.
Oh, that's been around for a while.
Yeah, no, they are selling a device to shoot coffee up your patootie.
How much is that?
A waste of coffee.
Damn straight it is.
It's $135, which is more than I spend on coffee in a month.
Wait, so that's an at-home device?
Yes.
Who the f*** would spend $135 to ingest coffee the wrong way? That's
Gwyneth
just wrong.
Paltrow.
Changing the topic for a second. Did anyone here see The Post?
No, not yet.
It's pretty fun.
What is the point of that movie? It was the New York Times that published the Pentagon Papers.
Yeah.
It was the Times that got sued. Why is anybody writing about The Post?
I could tell you
why. The Post story was Watergate, not the Pentagon Papers.
Because Meryl Streep wanted to play Katharine Graham?
Because they said Meryl Streep playing Katharine Graham, that's a movie. Yes, that's why.
Then reboot All the President's Men.
No, do not reboot that. That movie was perfect. Do not change it.
Yeah, please. I don't want to see a Ben Stiller version of All the President's Men.
Or, of course, Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
All the President's Men is this lasting blockbuster of a film with no car chases and no sex scenes. There's no romantic interest. It's people whispering in parking garages, and it's one of the most interesting movies ever made.
Well, I have to correct you there, Rebecca. Based on what we have now learned about Dustin Hoffman, I'm sure there were sex scenes. They just weren't during the actual takes. Yeah.
And I think Bob Woodward at the time was cheating on, or not Bob Woodward, Carl Bernstein at the time was cheating on Nora Ephron. So that was going on too.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
So we've talked a lot about the book. What about the fact that the DOJ or the FBI is now apparently reopening this Uranium One story? I'm sure it's because Sessions told the director of the FBI to do it, and he's, of course, a Trump appointee, too.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Let me jump in real quick. Let me jump in.
You go ahead, Greg.
This is it, y'all. This is it, you conservative guys. This is the one. After 7 years of trying to get Hillary, you got her. This is the one. Push the button. I mean, it wasn't the emails. It wasn't the server. It wasn't Benghazi. It's going to be this one. Everyone sleep tight tonight because,
Greg, oh my gosh. Tell them why you're being sarcastic.
Because she's innocent. This is
crazy.
Why is
she innocent?
Because she's either
innocent or she is the best criminal mastermind ever.
Right. No, it's because they're just trying to make an enemy that if Donald Trump could run against one person, it would be Hillary Clinton.
They want to run against Hillary Clinton in the midterms.
Right.
They're trying to create another Benghazi to run against in the midterms.
But here's the thing. Hillary Clinton had virtually nothing to do with the Uranium Russia deal.
The State Department
was one of nine government entities that it had to get tacit approval from. No, it does matter.
No, it doesn't. She could have signed the papers herself in her own blood. It doesn't matter because it was legal. Whatever she did, she's been investigated for years by top lawyers and investigators. And yet somehow they think after 8 years of people going over every moment of her life, they're going to think, oh, now we've got her. Now we've got her. After almost like a decade, they're going to say, oh, now we've got her. This is it. Sure. Just like my a relative of mine is like, you know, I got this law that I read on the internet. That's the one she broke, but no one's going to prosecute her for it. No, this is ridiculous. This is silly.
And speaking of prosecuting, Chuck Grassley, the senator, wants to now get an indictment or get charges against Christopher Steele, who was the guy who investigated and wrote the Trump-Russia dossier, because apparently Grassley says he made false statements to the FBI. Does anybody know what those alleged false statements are? Because I don't know what they are.
Maybe he said, you look nice today, and he didn't think the guy looked nice. I don't know.
Well, I'm wondering why the FBI... I'm wondering why the Department of Justice needs to be told by the Senate Judiciary Committee that a person lied to one of their sub-agencies.
Right, right.
That has me confused.
Well, I mean, this all smacks of the Congress, you know, sort of playing this dumb upsmanship. You know, well, you guys were going to prosecute George Papadopoulos for lying to the FBI. Maybe Steele lied to the FBI and you should prosecute him too. Huh, huh, huh. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, sure, sure. So basically, they're just all playing politics with our money and throwing it away.
So did Jeff Sessions lie to the Senate? I mean,
probably.
Are we going to talk about that one?
Which one are you talking about? Which lie?
Yeah, which time?
Yeah, which lie? I mean, come on, these guys are.
Well, what about, speaking of Jeff Sessions? What about this? The fact that the DOJ is now taking a strong anti-marijuana stance and just ignoring and eviscerating states' rights at the same time.
Well, it's what the Justice Department has decided to do. Oh, there was Obama-era guidance telling the DOJ not to step in states where they had legalized recreational marijuana. Just don't go in and prosecute licensed distributors in these states where it's been legalized. And Jeff Sessions is rescinding that guidance, effectively giving law enforcement permission to go arrest guys who run pot shops in Colorado and Oregon. It's ridiculous. There's no point to it. It's very expensive. It's racist as hell because, you know, it's...
But why do you think they do it? I know that...
Because
the first
Jeff Sessions
thing
is an
back-
investor in prisons for profit. That's why.
Well, I didn't expect that answer because the one that I expected was because it's going to appeal to the base. But, you know, how much can you appeal to the same base with the same issues? It seems so counterproductive to moving the country forward. I can't figure out where their freaking minds are.
No, it has to do with prisons for profit and DOJ contracts for prisons for profit. They need to make sure that they have an adequate supply of young black men to imprison on the country's dime to keep prisons for profit in profit.
Well, here's an answer to have that adequate supply. Stop shooting them.
No fucking
joke. So out of curiosity, Rebecca, was it just recreation or is it medical? Or is it medicinal also marijuana?
I think it has to do with recreational more than medical.
I'm reading the actual memo right now, and it doesn't say either. It doesn't say. It just says pursuing prosecution related to marijuana activities. But either way, isn't the Republican Party and the GOP Party the party of states' rights? And
this is a reminder. I have used this line before, not here on this podcast, but I've used it with my friends.
Sure. Go ahead.
Going all the way back to the Civil War, states' rights was not the Confederacy's cause; it was the Confederacy's hostage. And
that's a good line, dude.
Yeah,
and they use that,
and that is really the case that we are seeing now. In that, when Republicans felt they were losing the culture war, they fell back upon states' rights, and certainly racists fell back upon states' rights when they were losing the national debate. When they thought they were winning the national debate or whether they were in national power, they didn't give a damn about states' rights. Slaveholding states didn't give a damn about states' rights in the 1850s when they insisted on enforcing the fugitive slave law, despite northern states saying, well, we'd rather you not enforce that within our borders. Likewise, Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, doesn't give a damn about states' rights if the state does something that counters the federal ban on marijuana. Now, what I would like to see myself from the Democrats in Congress is at least an effort to push to decriminalize marijuana federally. Sure, it may not get through Congress. Sure, the Republicans may shoot it down, but at least make an effort, at least push and show voters, hey, not only are we willing to just yell at Jeff Sessions for being stupid, we actually want to change the law so that we can move forward from this rather bizarre federal restriction on marijuana. I'd like to see Democrats do that. Now, they may be doing that, and I may have missed that, in which case I'm sorry, but I'd like to see them try.
Oh, I'm certain at least one will offer a bill in the next year that will get a number of co-sponsors and then go nowhere.
And that's fine. If it gets shunted into oblivion by the congressional majority, that's fine. Just use it as a 2018 campaign.
No, absolutely. No, it's a good idea. And somebody from Oregon or somebody from Colorado probably will. They're probably drafting it right now. At least I hope so.
So, okay. So we've talked a lot about Trump. Let's change the topic to Donald Trump.
Awesome.
Well,
it's been a week.
We put a rundown together before every episode and we say, what can we talk about that doesn't touch on Donald Trump? And we can't come up with anything. But with that said, the government is facing a potential shutdown this month. I don't know whether is it the debt ceiling or is it what is
it's,
it that it, we're up
it's, against? It's a funding spending
it's
bill.
A funding. Fun, okay.
Right, 12 days.
And of course the GOP being the party of responsible governance is following is following President Trump's lead and trying to attach funding of the border wall to this government funding bill, which the Democrats will never ever agree to. And frankly, I think it's a bluff. I think Trump is going to fold. But what happens if Trump actually allows the government to shut down for 24 or 48 or 72 hours, trying to bully Democrats into giving him $18 billion so he can say, look, I got you the wall too.
Right. It goes beyond just asking for $18 billion for a border wall, because you're right. The Democrats won't go for that. He's saying, give me the border wall for $18 billion or there'll be no funding for DACA, for the right. Dreamers. Which is just balls, the balls on this man to ask for something like that, to hold children and people who have come to this country through no fault of their own, who have been raised in this country, many of them who actually believe they were citizens and find out that they may be deported to countries that they may not even speak the language, and to hold that over their heads for a campaign promise that he knew that he even said that Mexico would pay for. Balls.
Okay, but again, you're right. I mean, it's disgraceful. But what is the politics of it? Does Donald Trump think that, let's say that he refuses?
He doesn't.
To
he doesn't think.
DACA.
There's no
doesn't
thinking.
Think.
You know what? I'm going to be the outlier here. That although I have virtually no respect for the gentleman, I'm going to give him a little bit of credit that there is some strategy going on there, whether it's his or whether it's his advisors. And so, I'm trying to figure out what their long game is. Do they really think that by rejecting a deal on DACA, that the Democrats are going to pay a price in 2018? Do they think that the Latino community is somehow going to pull back from voting for Democrats in 2018 because he's going to say, look, I wanted to cut a deal on DACA and the Democrats refused? Does he really think that's going
to
work?
What he is relying on to answer your question, or what his staffers are telling him to rely on, is the fact that traditionally, whenever there is a showdown or a shutdown showdown between the president and Congress, the president usually wins. Clinton ran circles around the Republican Congress during the shutdown in the 1990s. Reagan usually scored some political points against the Democratic Congress during occasional shutdowns in the 1980s. And of course, Obama won easily over the Republicans in the shutdown in 2013. So what Trump's people are probably telling him, to the extent that there are anyone telling him who knows anything about this, is if you have a fight with the Democrats over a shutdown, you will win because you're the president and they are not. What's less certain about this, though, is the fact that usually the opposition party had control of one or both houses of Congress when this was happening. That is not the case now. So it's a bit it's a bit less clear that Trump would win a shutdown showdown with Democrats in the minority in both houses. So it's not.
Well, the other reason this would be a Trump-owned shutdown is because it would be a veto. He would be vetoing a CR to keep the government funded if it doesn't have this money in it.
Before.
So it would be his veto pen, as opposed to
Congress
not capitulating to his wishes.
But Clinton vetoed funding in 1995, and he still won the shutdown argument. Reagan vetoed funding in the early 1980s. He still won the shutdown argument. Obama never had the chance to veto funding because the Senate shot it down, but he made it clear he would have vetoed funding, and he still won the shutdown argument in 2013. But again, he was dealing—
I mean, in Obama's favor, the shutdown was caused largely by Ted Cruz, and nobody liked that guy.
Let me reframe this for a second, because you're all right. You're all correct. I think
we
what we're
so
missing
smart.
Is— I think here's how I analyze it. The party that gets blamed for the shutdown is the party that forces it, not because of a veto, but because they're trying to insert some legislation or insert some funding into that deal that the public is against. So in this case, it would be the Republicans trying to make DACA the focal point, the fulcrum of it, that the public, I think, is going to have a backlash against.
Well, it's not DACA, it's the wall.
That's my take.
It's the wall.
Well,
I get what you're coming from, but it's not necessarily DACA, it's the wall.
You said it right. You said it correctly. Thank you.
Right.
Okay. But that's my point, is that the public will blame the party that tried to use the funding to go around the other party to cut quarters. That's why sometimes that's why sometimes the president wins it, and that's why sometimes the party out of power wins it. It's not about who's in the White House. It's about who's trying to use it to gain an advantage that they shouldn't have legislatively.
Well, the problem is the party outside the White House has never won these shutdown battles. But two, the party in the White House has never actually tried to push to change the status quo the way Trump has. So you have two sort of competing theories, if you will, and we really don't know which one will win because the voters won't vote for another 10 months. But I would suspect, given that Trump has broken every other rule in politics, that he would probably also break the rule that the president tends to win in every shutdown. It wouldn't surprise me if Trump loses the shutdown.
And you know, there was one analysis, I think we all read it, that said that, you know, he was bringing this up to appeal back to his base. He's trying to, you know, he's emotionally wounded by what happened with this book this week, and so he's going back to the campaign playbook of wall, build the wall. And Democrats' refusal to build the wall feels like a winner to him, and he doesn't understand the implications of a shutdown.
I have a theory. This is a conspiracy, totally wild theory, that he plans on tanking the GOP. I mean, this is like he's going to do a shutdown on purpose for like a month and just make sure that the GOP tanks in 2018, just across the board, because he knows that the economy is going to go down the tubes and everything. And so the Democrats are going to get the House and the Congress and the House of Representatives.
Let Greg finish his madcap theory.
So he does this, right? So now the Democrats have the two houses, right? And then come 2020, right? Trump goes, wait a second. we were doing great up until 2018 when the Democrats got into the House.
He plays the Truman card and does the do-nothing Congress bit.
And then he goes, and then we went into economy shithouse. Now, it had nothing to do with the fact that he rode the coattails of Obama, and then this tax cut went in, and we had a month of bullshit, and then they've tanked this economy for 2 years, and then he gets another 4 years. So he does this whole play, tanks the GOP for 2 years, and then they all get reelected in 2020. That's his madcap scheme. And you know what? It just might work.
Well, that's crazy. Crazy. There's a lot of credit for advanced planning. The guy is so in the moment. I don't think he can see beyond.
Okay. I think he was sitting there playing with dinosaurs and cowboys and going, rah, rah, okay, rah, I'll kill you. I'll tell you. That's what he thought.
Yeah, Greg. I don't know whether Trump has actually thought that far ahead. I doubt he has. But since you have thought that far ahead, it is not altogether implausible, and it then depends on what the Democrats choose to do in 2020. If they think Trump is easily beatable and they lunge to the far left, then yes, they'll leave themselves wide open to something like this. If they are, however, willing to nominate a candidate who is willing to take Trump on what he is doing, and by this point, he'll probably also kill NAFTA and blame the resulting recession on the Democrats. But if the Democrats are willing to nominate someone who will take Donald Trump on freer trade, who will take Donald Trump on his economic mismanagement, and who can appeal to voters who voted for Donald Trump because he had an R next to his name, but who are now looking at the Trump administration going, wait, I didn't want to back away from NAFTA. I didn't want all this ridiculous government intervention that Trump likes because he's a populist moron. If the Democrats are willing to appeal to those voters, then they will solve the Trump puzzle. But if they lunge far leftward, then even if Trump has no idea what you're talking about, and I'm sure he doesn't, Greg, he will still benefit from what you're talking about.
Well, I just find it interesting. It, Greg postulated a theory, and DJ said he believed that was the Truman method or how Truman handled it. DJ, I guarantee you if there's any strategy that the president is trying to apply in this particular case, it's probably something that he saw Sheldon Cooper do in an episode of The Big Bang Theory. I don't think he
watches The Big Bang Theory.
I think he would have trouble telling you President Truman's first name.
That's probably true, but the fact of the matter is, whether or not Trump has thought this far ahead or not, and I don't think he has, what Greg has postulated could very well happen. It doesn't matter that Trump hasn't thought about it. It doesn't matter. I don't think Trump is deliberately trying to ensure Republicans lose in 2018. But if Republicans do lose in 2018, which I think they probably will, then come 2020, he will have people whispering in his ear, blame Congress for everything, and he will gladly jump upon that idea like a drowning man reaching for a life raft. It doesn't matter that he hasn't thought this far ahead. That doesn't matter.
Nah, he wants to hold the House. He wants to hold the Senate. I'm sure he does.
I don't know.
Kevin, I'm with you on that one. I don't think he deliberately wants to give up the House and Senate in 2018. But if he does, because he's just too effing stupid, which he probably is, then come 2020, he will take advantage of the fact that the opposition holds one or both houses of Congress and blame them for everything that's gone wrong.
Okay, I'm going to step in here and move on. So we talked about whether the president is too effing stupid, and of course that's a topic that is on everyone's tongue these days. But the president himself has kind of set us straight by telling us he's a very stable genius. And Greg, what were your thoughts on that tweet, and what is it, you know...
Okay, I think the lady doth protest too much, but as they say in the theater. But the question is, how do you actually know if you're a stable genius? I mean,
yeah,
and you know, I'll be quite honest. As a teacher, I did a graduate paper once on test results and things. So I went back to my school, the school I went to, and looked in my file. They say, here's your file. This is going to stay in your permanent record. I looked at my permanent record, and I looked at all my things. I can tell you definitively, I'm not a genius. Were you guys
expecting something different? Yeah, I need to go look at my different? Files and see what it says about me.
I saw my SAT. I mean, not SATs. That shows you how stupid I am. I saw my IQ test. My second grade IQ test scores. I know what my IQ is.
But I will tell you what. Your IQ scores from second grade up until fourth, fifth, and sixth change greatly. Most people's, uh-oh, and that was what my paper was about, actually. A lot of them don't level out until fourth, fifth, or sixth because of maturity and when you should start taking those tests. And so a lot of people don't
leveled out
believe,
around 40. I think that's when I started maturing.
So do they go right down generally, or could they go
up? They could go down if you started school early, and if you started school late. So if you were mature, but a lot like mine started really low because I have a very late birthday, I was 17 when I graduated high school. I was practically 17 when I went to college.
Okay, I was 17 when I went to college. Greg, we are soul sisters here.
But the point being is, I've got some questions for y'all to see if you guys are. So the first one, let's see if you guys are geniuses. The first one is a math question. So I'll take the first answer who buzzes in, the first one who yells out. Okay. We'll see who the genius is. Okay? Oh. So it's a math question. So you guys can use a calculator if you want.
I've heard
but
of math.
See if you
go
can.
Ahead.
Okay. If you multiply all the numbers on a phone, what was the answer?
Who the f*** cares?
You actually end up dialing a number in Virginia.
If you multiply all the numbers on a phone, what do you get? Quick.
you get a number, man. I don't know.
181,912.
362,280.
No.
Really?
I still think my first answer, who the f*** cares?
It's zero.
Because of zero, oh, because you're multiplying by zero. Okay, so we all horribly failed the first question. Okay,
you guys all horribly failed the first question. Horrible. Here we go. All right. Okay. A cowboy rides into town on Friday. He stays one night and leaves again on Friday. How is this possible?
Well, I know the answer to this one. I've heard it many times. I'll let the others go first.
He comes in on Friday. He stays one night. He leaves again on Friday.
Yes.
That's what I heard.
Yep.
Well, if he comes in after...
How is that possible?
If he comes in after midnight into Friday morning and then stays and leaves Friday, then that's how he does it.
Nope.
Okay. Rebecca, do you have a guess before I give the answer?
Not a goddamn answer, but I can quote Shakespeare.
Well, that's smarter than I am, I'll tell you that. Well, Kevin. Again, I don't take any credit for this because I'd heard this one before. Friday is the name of the horse he rode in on.
Oh.
Okay. Well, while all that was going on, I would also like to say that those of us who have mental health issues, be it complex PTSD, be it anxiety, be it depression, whatever, we all take solace in the fact that we are not Donald Trump. Because if he calls himself stable, those of us who call ourselves mentally unstable take it as a badge of honor. Thank you.
Well said. Hear, hear.
Agreed.
And I'll tell you what, we don't have time to do it this week, but in next week or very soon after, I'd like to have a discussion about whether it's valid to do a psychological profile of someone that you have never actually sat down with. As you probably know, that's been in the news today. Michael Smirkanish did a big segment about that on CNN yesterday. Saying that, you know, from his perspective, all of these psychiatrists that are coming out and analyzing Donald Trump shouldn't be doing that because you're not supposed. They call it the Goldwater rule because I guess people did this to Barry Goldwater in 1964. I'd love to discuss that with you guys next week.
Oh, I would love to discuss that.
Yeah, that's a really good discussion.
I'll read a comic book about it.
That's a cliffhanger. But with that said, we have run our time, so let's thank everybody for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. Also, we have a new website for the show, it's called MorePerfectUnionPodcast.com. Let me say that again, www.MorePerfectUnionPodcast.com. It's got a total redesign. You can look for us there. You'll find our articles. You'll find our shows. You'll find bios about The Four of Us, and lots of other fun stuff. And the Facebook group that we're all in, Open Fire Politics, also has a new website that we're very proud of. So please check out openfirepolitics.com, and you can read some of the content that you will find in the group. It's a great discussion group. If you'd like to debate politics between shows and debate it with us and other smart, fun people, please join us there. Any last words? The Golden Globes are going on as we speak. Rebecca, what's your favorite dress that you've seen?
Ooh, Allison Janney is looking really awesome from the pictures I'm glancing at. Kerry Washington is spectacular. And Kevin, who are you wearing?
Well, I'm wearing a Fruit of the Loom.
looking good, looking good.